How many of you have ever used the words, "I feel that you have betrayed me"? Hands are popping up all over the place. Yeah. Or maybe had someone say that to you. But when we say that, "I feel that you betrayed me," what we really mean is, I felt scared, abandoned, left hanging, caught off guard, deceived, dishonored. One of the headlining news that has been in the on television and in our papers for the last couple of weeks has been the investigation of the January 6th insurrection, a time when, as a nation, we clearly saw it as a betrayal of our ideals of democracy, attempting to thwart peaceful transference of power to certify the votes of President Biden's electoral win. As a country, we are dealing right now with that betrayal, people who seemingly abandoned our principles of democracy. A friend told me once that they used to open their home for young boys in his neighborhood, and that these boys didn't have fathers in their lives or mentors, and so he would mentor them as a father figure. He fed them, he housed them. He said, "I would teach them how to drive when that time came. I'd give them fatherly advice until," he said, "one day I learned that they broke into my house." And he said, "I was so angry, I felt so betrayed, that I decided to stop helping young men and opening my home to them. The betrayal," he said, "was too painful, and I didn't want to risk being disappointed again." He was speaking of personal betrayal. A woman once told me that one of the greatest betrayals in her marriage was her husband walking out on her and refusing to engage in hard conversations about their commitment to endure good and bad times together, sickness and health, and what honoring each other all the days of their lives could and should look like. She said, "The abandonment of my wedding day promises left me feeling betrayed. Each of us," as I listened to her story, I thought, each of us probably carry a betrayal story. The interesting thing about betrayal is that sometimes it's just part of life, not because we deserve it or we should expect it, but because often betrayal is birthed out of feelings of fear, resentment, anxiety, which, to be truthful, we all can feel. Amen? Y'all talk to me. Can't we all feel those things? We are all wielding and shook by the shooting in Buffalo. I know it's been on my mind. Can't stop thinking about it. So maybe as you think about the shooting in Buffalo, the violence in the world, the racism, the terror, it'd be very easy for us to also feel betrayed of our human values and principles, where we have been called to care for one another, to think about and work for each other's well-being. So perhaps we're feeling betrayed by the letting go of those values and principles. When someone betrays us, our immediate reaction, and the natural reaction sometimes, is to reject them from our lives in order to protect ourselves. Oprah Winfrey once had a quote that said, "I don't want anybody who don't want me." And yet it's a biblical spin on an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. As painful as betrayal and rejection is returning fire for fire, an ejection of the person from our lives, erasure from our heart, the only return response? This weekend's gospel finds Jesus doing something quite interesting. It finds him still preaching love, even as Judas leaves to betray him. The question is, can we do the same? So Jesus in the gospel shows us another way to respond to betrayal. He chooses to teach love, and he asks us and his disciples to do the same. Instead of stewing over the betrayal that is happening as Judas leaves to sell him out, to breach his trust, and deceive him for 30 pieces of silver, which would be about $91, Jesus focuses on a new commandment of love to give his disciples in the face of betrayal, knowing that the clock is ticking on his freedom and on his life. He gives this final message. I believe that Jesus gives the most consequential commandment ever known to mankind to them. Love one another, he says. As I have loved you, so you also should love one another. He invites them into a reflection of his love and then asks them to do likewise to each other. Why does Jesus do that? Jesus knows that betrayal almost always evokes fear in the one betrayed and drives the one who betrays. Fear of the future, fear of opportunity, fear of ability to trust again, fear of security, fear of self-worth. You see, Jesus was not immune to these temptations, just as we are not. When Judas finally betrays him with a kiss, his heart was not protected from pain any more than ours is. When someone with close, intimate proximity to us stings us, whether it's with malice or not, or acts of betrayal or apathy, we can rest assured in those moments that Jesus empathizes with us. Jesus sees our pain. Jesus also knows that the only way to dethrone fear in our lives, brought on by betrayal, is through love. That's why betrayal always has two victims, because everybody needs love. So he tells us and his disciples that the only response to betrayal that invokes fear is to love beyond it. To love beyond it. He begins this teaching so that they might develop habits of love for each other and for those that they will be called to serve in the world. I'm reading a book by Father Ed Bacon. He's an Episcopal priest from All Saints Church in California, and he wrote a book called The 8 Habits of Love. And he says that if you want to transform your life and the world, we should practice these 8 habits of love. Generosity, stillness, truth, candor, play, forgiveness, compassion, and community. These habits, he says, will help us to leave behind the force field of fear and enter the force field of love. And we know that Jesus mastered these habits of love with his betrayal, and today he invites us to take them up so that we might have love function beyond the betrayal of our own lives. I'm working on a Bible study from this book, but for today's homily, I'm just gonna focus on the first habit of love, generosity. Generosity is the practice of opening our hearts to give and receive, allowing every gift that flows into each of us from Jesus to flow through us to others, and to ask, how does Jesus love me so that I can love you? How does Jesus love me so that I can love you? So how does Jesus love us? I started writing a little list for myself, and I thought, well, Jesus loves me through the gift of joy, breath, salvation, companion, compassion, truth, peace, kindness, new beginnings, forgiveness, trust, wisdom, provision, healing, dignity, welcoming into the family of God, inclusion, just to name a few things. And I could have gone on forever. But it is also why that we are an inclusive and a mission-driven church. Jesus was constantly opening his heart of generosity to others in the face of rejection and doubt, challenge, disappointment, or betrayal. He refused to let anything shut down his heart of generosity. And we must do the same. Not a shooting in Buffalo, not a war in Ukraine. We must let nothing shut down our hearts of generosity. Jesus' heart remained generous. When the rich young ruler rejected him, when Judas betrayed him, when Peter disappointed him, when townspeople doubted him, when authorities challenged him and Roman authorities and the power system targeted him, he simply turned his wounds into wisdom of love. How do we develop this habit of love? Well, we have to have a starting place. And sometimes the hardest person to love is ourselves. So we have to start with being generous with ourselves. Be patient with yourself. Allow yourself some flexibility to make mistakes. Make some bad choices and learn from them. Embrace self-care. Hold a baby. Give some power away and don't worry about diluting your own. Challenge the myths of scarcity when that fear rises up in you. Commit to generosity no matter what happens in your life. Know that your kindness has a ripple effect throughout the universe. There's a beautiful quote that I love that says, "You have two hands, one to help yourself, the second to help others." So we can practice being generous with others, especially if they cannot return the favor. So maybe we can take a homeless person to lunch this week, buy a gift for a child, take in a struggling individual and help them get on their feet if we can, forgive a debt. I have been the recipient of so many people's generosity that has shaped me and filled me with gratitude, inspiring me to be more generous with others. I'll never forget the generosity that I experienced with Reverend Mary. When I was having excruciating back pain a few years ago, and I thought I was having kidney stones. And so I picked up the phone and I called in that morning to work to drive myself to emergency. And as I was talking to her on the phone, I looked up, and to my surprise, there she was, pulling her car up to my house. She had decided that she was going to take me to the hospital herself, and she stayed with me until I was discharged. She had formed a habit of generosity. But forming a habit of generosity takes practice. And Jesus practiced in every part of his life. And so when I'm practicing, it helps me to have some guiding questions. Like, what is the most generous thing that I can do or say here? Am I being called to share time, resources, or truth? What fear do I need to dethrone in order to be more generous? And like Jesus, we can all practice this habit of generosity and learn really from his interaction with Judas. What does Jesus do? He starts with the habit of truth that Father Bacon speaks about. Jesus acknowledges the reality that betrayal is going to happen, and he says, "One of the 12 of you will betray me." So speaking your truth in betrayal is important. Truth allows us to take responsibility for our actions. Judas does take responsibility when Jesus says that. Judas gets up. And when Judas gets up to betray Jesus, Jesus continues to model the habit of generosity with him. He addresses him, "Friend, do what you must do and do it quickly." And so Jesus parts with Judas without any malice. He doesn't slander Judas. He doesn't cast judgment on him. He doesn't gossip about him. He continues to call Judas friend. He doesn't allow Judas's final act to negate and erase the relationship that Jesus had with him up until that point. Jesus didn't retaliate. He practiced the habit of generosity that centered love as the focus of attention. He teaches us to remember the goodness of those who betray you, to not hold on to malice or resentment, instead to focus on generosity. The more we do it, the more we want to do it, and it will become a habit. We have so many people in the parish that model this habit of generosity as a habit of love. One group is our sacristans, who are one of the kindest groups of people in the parish. They generously give of their time, not only at the masses masses each week, but they are at every funeral and wedding and first communion. They set up baptisms and special liturgies, and sometimes at a day's notice. And they never complain. They very joyfully just give out of this gift of generosity. I think of the generosity of downtown church's maintenance man named Bobby. And I was the recipient of his generosity this week. Usually Fridays are pretty low-key, but this past Friday, it was off the rails. I had him juggling calls to help people to prevent eviction. There was an important appointment that didn't show up that was going to really change this person's life. There was a man in desperate need of a case manager who walked in. There was another walk-in of a man whose relative had died and he was in need of transportation money to get to the funeral, along with a host of other meetings and to-do things to do on my list that I had before I got there that morning. And as I was feeling completely stressed, in walks Bobby, the maintenance man. To my surprise, and he's carrying a vase full of lilacs. I couldn't believe it. Lilacs? He didn't know this, but lilacs were my favorite flower. And he set it on my table. And you know, the fragrance just really began to fill the room. But I went over and I took a whiff of those lilacs then and frequently throughout the day. And every time I did, I felt a reset. The fragrance filled me, reminding me of the reality and the presence of God's love and that God is in charge. So every worry, every feeling of stress just disappeared in the stillness of smelling those lilacs. And it all began with Bobby's generosity. So maybe this week there is somebody in your life that you can surprise with the habit of generosity. I also think of Clarence Sabella, who's a member of our Spark team here at Spiritus. Spark learned that Baden Street Settlement needed some help clearing out some rooms, expanding its office and its program space. And so many of the volunteers went over to clear out rooms. And they noticed that the rooms also needed painting and the gym needed painting. And Clarence, out of the generosity of his heart, volunteered his entire painting staff to paint those spaces. And because of that one act, hundreds of people from that predominantly Black neighborhood and community are now being served. I think of the habit of generosity that each of you, as parishioners and staff and parish leaders, possess and model with the children that you serve, the elders, the clients, the patients, employees, colleagues, students that you care for in your life. The ripple effect that this habit of love is having in the world is powerful. It's inspiring. It's moving us. So powerful that Jesus invites us to use it in the moments of betrayal and every other moment that we can. Generosity is one of the 8 habits of love that helps us unlock the inner sanctuary that's in each of us and those we encounter. Jesus uses it to remind us that we are more than our greatest betrayal and our deepest pain. Jesus invites the disciples and us today to drink from his fountain of love for us. The great poet Hafiz captured this powerfully and beautifully when he wrote, "I know the way you get when you have not had a drink of love. Your face hardens, your sweet muscles cramp, children become concerned about a strange look that appears in your eyes. Squirrels and birds sense your sadness and call an important conference in a tall tree. They decide with which secret code and chant to help your mind and soul. I know the way that you can get if you have not had a drink from love's hand."